Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the program on Monday. It's hard to believe, 7th of February already, 2022. We are now in our 12th year with our radio show and 34 years on TV and radio here in Tucson. Our program broadcasts from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. The call letters KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening. That means if you're anywhere near a computer, you can log in to BuckmasterShow.com, where you can listen to the program live. If you miss the program, we have all of the podcasts available for you pretty much over the last 11 years. Our live line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday political face-off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe and his family specialize in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls. They have some beautiful art at the shop. They can take care of all the picture framing. And if you don't want to, do all the hanging yourself, Mo would be delighted to come out and do it the way you want. He'll place your newly framed piece of art on the wall. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Our Monday political face-off featuring our team of commentators this week. Seated to my right, Shelley Kice, one-time congressional candidate, current chair of the Pima County Republican Party, and one of the five members of the Continental School Board. Also with us, his first appearance now on the face-off, we welcome him to our family of political commentators, Brian Bickle. Brian is treasurer of the Pima County Democratic Party. Brian ran for Pima County Supervisor in District 1 in 2016, and he ran for Pima County Treasurer in 2020. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bill. Glad to be here.
Shelley, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Doing pretty good. How is the new year shaping up for you?
Well, the new year is turning out to be a very exciting new year. We're moving forward, lots to do, and I'm so excited because I'm getting to meet Brian today. So.
Mm-hmm. New person. Let's talk a little bit about this whole issue of what's called critical race theory. Education Week magazine says since January of 2021, Republican lawmakers in 37 states have introduced dozens of bills to restrict teaching on the subject of race and racism under the umbrella of what's called critical race theory. 14, by the way, Arizona is one of those 37 states. In 14 states, restrictions have either been passed into law or have been imposed through executive action or the authority of the state education commissions in various states. In Arizona, the Arizona House of Representatives has passed a measure concerning the critical race theory. The vote was to ban critical race theory. Brian, is this an effort, in your opinion, to censor American history for students?
I don't know that it's an effort to censor American history for students. It probably is an attempt to lead it in a particular direction. I don't know how successful that might be. Part of it is, we often make the assumption that if we don't talk about it, people don't know about it, don't learn about it, don't hear about it, don't think about it. And I think frequently when you make an effort to contain something artificially, it probably does more to cause people to dialogue and express their opinion on the issue than if you just didn't say anything about it and let time take its course and figure out where we're going to be. I think the big issue with critical race theory is there isn't a definition of it out there that everybody can agree on. This is what critical race theory actually is. Certainly the people that are given credit for establishing the theory say that a lot of stuff people that are referring to today as critical race theory isn't what they intended it to be when they coined the term. So I think that's going to be the biggest issue is does the legislation that's being introduced significantly or sufficiently address the definition of what we'd like to call critical race theory?
Maybe Shelley can help us. How do you define it?
Well, you know what? This is really an interesting topic to start off with today. And, you know, it's made it right to the kitchen table and right into our living rooms because even Dr. Phil had a show about critical race theory.
No kidding.
Yes, he did. So when Dr. Phil's talking about it at 3 o'clock on the Channel 4, then we know that it's being talked about at the kitchen table and in our homes. Continental School District passed a 5-0 resolution saying that we would not have critical race theory taught in our school district. And so what we were focused on, however, is that we can't make one child be or feel as the oppressed and another as the oppressor. And that's what we're seeing. And we see this on the news every night where we're seeing school districts where, children are being berated by teachers, whether they have probably the most recent one that we're seeing right now is a child that was wearing a Blue Lives Matter face mask. And the teacher berated him, said it was the equivalent of a Confederate flag. And did he understand? And the kid didn't even know what a Confederate flag was. So what we're trying to do through this is make sure that our children, we certainly want them to understand history. We want them to know and understand the ills of slavery, of the Holocaust, of all of man's inhumanity to man. But what we don't want to do is set up our classrooms to be those who are oppressed and those who are the oppressor. We don't want someone to feel guilty for being something they have no control over. And initially, I believe that critical race theory was established in our law schools to teach the systemic issue of race within our judicial system. There is probably places for discerning minds at the legal system and our law students, our judges, to need to have to discuss that. But to put it in third grade for a kid to feel oppressed and need to have to explain their heritage of which they had no control. Yeah, we can't have that in our schools.
What do you think, Brian?
You know, I understand what Shelley's saying. I think the bigger issue is, yes, I agree with her. I don't think we need to have the oppressed and the oppressor, but I don't know that coming up with legislation to ban critical race theory or the discussion of race or racism is going to fix the problem. I think I've spent enough time in enough areas and enough different cultures to understand the example she gave about the teacher that got upset with the child that was wearing the Blue Lives mask. That's not an educational policy problem. That's an individual teacher problem. And I don't know that legislation would fix that. Certainly the surefire fix to that is to get rid of the teacher. And I think coming up with performance standards and expectations in the educational environment goes much further in eliminating the problem than trying to come up with legislation that bans or has the potential to ban the teaching of certain subject material in the educational system. My family, I can trace myself back to 1845. My family was my great-great-great-great-four-great-grandfather mm-hmm. was one of 15 people in a religious missionary colony that came over from Germany in 1845 to minister to the Chippewa Indians in central Michigan. There was a piece on the news last night about schools in Canada, the last one, which closed in 1998, where the government undertook to get the Indigenous character out of the Indigenous people. We did the same thing in the United States, not as recently, but
That was on 60 Minutes last night about the way Canada treated their First Nation people.
Yeah, and I don't think that was successful in any way, shape, or form, and I don't think trying to do anything like that is going to be successful going forward.
Shelley, what about the definition? I think people are, what is critical race theory? How would you define it?
So, and this is the problem. Yes. I mean, this is what Dr. Phil brought on his show. He had one guy sitting on his right and another guy sitting on his left. So it really depends. So what we did on our school board is we said more of what it's not than what it is. In other words, what shouldn't it be? It shouldn't be an opportunity for an individual to make someone feel less than or to make someone feel better than. It's an opportunity to ensure that our teachers are providing the children with the facts and not with the emotion associated with the fact, which isn't always easy to do. It's not always easy to do. And that's one of the things that certainly we learn in the military, we learn in police work, we learn in analytics, we learn that we need to identify the facts and keep the emotion out. And that is more how we see critical race theory, ensuring that our students are learning the facts of history and not so much getting an interpretation of a teacher's emotions aligned with the history.
All right. We're going to pause right here, Brian and Shelley. Now it's time. Brian, you have not been with us before here on the Monday Political Face-Off. This is when we all agree on that we like bakery goods. Yes. And we're talking about Mona's Danish Bakery. Have you been up there yet, Brian?
No, I haven't.
To the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is home to the Danish Kringle, as Shelley well knows. And I was up at Mona's Saturday, and talking with Steve, the owner and chief baker, and he says, for Valentine's Day, which is a week from today, Steve and the team have prepared something called a heart-shaped Kringle. So it can come in whatever flavor you would like. Usually it's almond paste. Does this sound fairly interesting and tempting to you, Brian?
Well, I don't know about interesting. It sounds very tempting, though.
Open right now. Well, actually, they are taking Mondays now off. They're open Tuesday through Sunday, open at 6:30 in the morning. What do you think, Shelley?
Well, I'm hoping Jim's listening. That's my husband.
Oh.
I'm hoping that he's getting the idea that a heart-shaped
Kringle
might be a great idea.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. All right, we'll pause right here. It is our Monday Political Face-Off. Brian Bickle is with us, and Shelley Keiss. Brought to you and us by not only Mona's Danish Bakery, but our title sponsor, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster on a Monday. It is the 7th of February. It's our Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Our team of commentators today, Shelley Kice is with us, seated to my right, representing Republicans and representing Democrats, is Brian Bickle. Brian is the treasurer of the local Pima County Democratic Party, and he's also been very active in politics, running for office a couple of times since 2016. Shelley ran for office as well for Congress a couple of years ago. Let's talk about what we hope won't happen over in Europe. Would be a certainly we don't need a full-blown or even any kind of blown confrontation between Russia and Ukraine. Shelley, what should the Biden administration's response be in the opinion, in your opinion, and those of Republicans?
Well, you know, one of the things that I wrote about this morning in the Chairman's Journal was the GRU, which is the intelligence agency of Russia. And we should be very, very concerned about what's going on right now. First off, we're under a continuing resolution that expires next week. We don't see any end in sight. There's no movement forward on at the Capitol. And what they're even projecting is that they could likely go into a continuing resolution for an entire year. So when I hear President Biden come out and talk about how he's going to do a name and shame to the Russians, that's not very helpful. This is about energy. And the, you know, we have to back up and we have to look at where this is coming from. You know, years ago, probably 8 or 10 years ago, I talked about the former chancellor of Germany aligning with Putin to put in as Gazprom began. And now we see Nord Stream 2 going in. there is huge concern in Europe right now about the rising costs of energy, up 33%. People are trying to heat their homes, stay warm. We have, if you look at Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, those are all members of the EU. Why isn't Ukraine part of the EU? I mean, just take a look at all of the countries west of the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They're all part of part of NATO. Mm-hmm. And yet we're not getting Ukraine in there. This is about energy. This is about natural gas. Ukraine has natural gas. Russia has natural gas. We're seeing all of this coming into play. We see Germany, who is a recipient of the energy, the natural gas. We see Germany saying, you know what? We'll send humanitarian aid, but we're not sending lethal weapons. This is heating up. And President Biden playing name and shame. We're going to sanction them for this. There have been sanctions. There's about five or six sanctions that are sitting on the books right now. This is a really big issue. And seeing Putin stand with the president in China and joining hands, it should be a real concern. Everybody needs to keep their eye on China going into Taiwan, and they need to keep their eye on Russia going into Ukraine. And in the meantime, they need to be forcing our Congress to do their job and pass a budget. We can't go to war if we don't have the money. And if we don't have the money, just think about this. It could be just a few days from now when we shut down because our budget can't get passed, and we can't, or we put a continuing resolution in. This is a very serious issue, and everybody needs to be very aware of it.
What do you think, Brian? What's your take?
Well, it's been a long time since we've had a budget. I think we've operated on CRs for the last decade or
the
more.
Continuing resolutions?
It's
Shelley shaking her head. Well, you don't think it's
that
long?
We've had a budget, but it's never showed up on time.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Brian.
As far as the Ukraine is concerned, I agree. It's an energy issue. Western Europe gets most of its petroleum products from Russia and Ukraine.
And natural gas, right?
Natural gas, petroleum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I think this is a move by Putin to find a way to encroach into Ukraine and get control of some of those resources. For an economic shot in the arm for Russia. The country needs it. Going to war, as a retired warrior, I don't think that's the first option that anybody would like to think of. I heard a comment on the radio on the way down here earlier today. We could go to war in 3 or 4 days. Possibly, and 3 or 4 days after that, it might be all over with. Depends on what happens. Certainly, having been in the desert in 1991, the 100-hour war that we had over there didn't go the way anybody expected it was going to go. I don't think whatever happens in Ukraine, it's going to go the way anybody thinks it might go or expects it to go. I think that's the biggest issue we've got right now is the certain uncertainty that exists over there as far as the military posturing.
But what about Shelley's charge? The Biden administration is really dropping the ball on this issue, Brian.
I don't know that it's as much the Biden administration as it is. This is a position where the position I'd agree with her on. It's time for Congress to figure out how to get their job done and do what needs to be done. And get the financial ducks lined up the way they're supposed to be so that we're ready to do what we need to do when the time comes to do it. There's a lot of rhetoric that goes on. I've heard it from Biden, Trump, Bush, Obama, Clinton, Bush, Reagan, go back as far as you want. There's always a lot of vocal posturing going on, and probably not the smartest thing anybody ever did. But I think the fact that we've got a Congress that's at a stalemate on most issues now is probably the biggest issue looking at it from a domestic perspective. I think the rising cost of energy in Western Europe is something that she said is a great concern. The rising cost of energy in this country is going to be of a great concern, because if you take the primary supplier for Western Europe out of the picture, and they end up utilizing some of the resources that we currently utilize, it's not going to be good for us either.
Bad news all around. But something has to be done, Shelley. That's your message?
Well, the key is right now the White House, the Senate, and the House are in the hands of the Democrats, and something does need to be done. Part of the reason that Putin is so interested in the Ukraine has to do with the fact that they have to pay transitory costs to get their natural gas from Russia across Ukraine. This is all about energy, and the Biden administration and the Senate and the House standing up and doing a name and shame and sanctions isn't going to get the job done. I am by no means a warrior or an advocate of war, but we do need to demonstrate strength, and we need to stand up to what's going on.
All right, Brian, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you joining the
You're
team.
You're welcome. Okay? My pleasure.
Shelley, always a pleasure.
Good
thank
to see
you very
you.
Much. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. We'll take a break right here, then we'll have a conversation with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Everett
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zilkalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Perfect time of year where we're in that transition period. Maybe the last of the hard freezes are over. I hope so. The good news is my hibiscus is going to make it. Actually had a flower today, so that the flower came out after we brought it inside. Say, like, what are you doing leaving me outside? Hibiscus don't do real well in cold weather, so but I've nursed it along for 2 years, so I'm very happy. And it was purchased at Green Things. Their 13-acre site has not only hibiscus but everything you could imagine for your garden, and they also have Zocalo Village. Beautiful merchandise, much of it handcrafted from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Here are a couple of websites for you, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Green Things, 51st year of business, open every morning. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Let's go now on the live line. Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek joining us. Councilman, how are you today? How was your weekend?
It's wonderful, and let me give a plug to one of your other sponsors, the Danish Bakery, our
Mona's.
Favorite.
Right? We love Mona's. Mona's Danish Bakery.
An absolutely wonderful cherry turnover over there last weekend, so wanted to plug them as well.
And I know you have enjoyed their Kringles in the past, and they are going to be doing, for Valentine's Day, a heart-shaped Kringle, so... if you get the urge.
Okay.
Tomorrow, the council is going to be looking at coming out of what do we do about economic development in the post-pandemic world. Some of your thoughts, Steve Kasachek.
We benefited greatly from the two different federal assistance bills, the CARES money, the ARPA money. That has put us in a really good position, and so we've also got an economic development staff that is top drawer. My hope is that we don't try and do this alone, that we link arms with the county economic development people and look at ways that we can partner regionally in terms of attracting appropriate business to the area. County's got a great economic development team as well, and I think that working together, we're stronger. We present a stronger front than if we individually try and do it. This is the city and the county, so that's what I'm hoping for. We've done a lot in the downtown core, as you know, in the last 10 or 12 years. We've got an infill incentive district. We've got a lot of incentives that businesses have used. I was just out today and we saw Caterpillars down there. We've got four hotels now, and it's more than simply student housing. But that economic development punch that we've really gotten in the downtown core, we have to expand that out to the perimeter outside of the central core. One of the hallmarks of any successful city is that they've got a successful downtown core, but it doesn't stop there. And so expanding that development work to other parts of the city is going to be important. And that's the reason, one of the reasons I feel that working with the county is going to be an important piece of our solution. I would also add this, and this will take not only the city and the county working together, but the department, the state as well, ADOT. Our ace in the hole has always been the area called the Sonoran Corridor. That is the connection between I-10 and I-19 out by Tucson International. It's also out by the Port of Tucson. It's also out by Raytheon. And so the development of that area involves air transport, rail transport, cargo, international cargo, because it's coming up I-19, I-10. and over the road to Phoenix and other areas. And so the build-out of the Sonoran Corridor, there's not another region in the state that brings air, rail, and over-the-road cargo transport and international commerce as well. So we have that sitting there waiting to be developed, and it will take the city, the county, and the state working together to get that done.
What are you hearing about the GEM show?
You know, I was out today driving around by the freeway, and they're still active, and there are lots of vendors still out. It's been very successful, even with the COVID protocols that they have, to their credit, put into place. But we've gotten a lot of positive response from the vendors and from the citizens who've taken part. So they were back in a relatively scaled down version, but that's to their credit that they recognize that we're not out of COVID yet, but they still wanted to do it. You know, we're going to have similar events. You know, the book festival will be back on the U of A campus this next month, March, I think it's 12th and 13th. And so people are kind of slowly getting back into the grind, but the GEM show is, as you know, it's huge for the area. And we're glad that they were back. It's a big economic kick to us, and they also have appreciated the fact that we've now got three or four downtown hotels to really support what they're doing. Plus, the $25 million that Rio Nuevo has recently put into the Tucson Convention Center, the expanded meeting rooms, more robust internet connections. They've all been asking for that, and so we've really upped our game. And so coming out of COVID, it's great to see them back, and I know that they appreciate what we've done in anticipation of them getting back here.
One of the other issues that will be talked about at the council meeting tomorrow is homelessness. This has always been a very difficult issue. The problem isn't as great as some of the cities in California, but there is homelessness. There's no question here in Tucson.
Yeah, and nobody has a silver bullet. Nobody in Tucson has a silver bullet. Nobody anywhere has a silver bullet. You're correct in saying that other cities, California, Oregon, all over the country, Chicago, they've got a much more significant, in terms of numbers, homeless problem than we do. But that doesn't mean ours is just a piece of cake and that we can just turn a blind eye to it. One of the problems with homelessness is simply defining it. And so when people say that, your mind's eye might go to the guy laying in a sleeping bag in an alley somewhere. It can also be the veteran with PTSD. It can be the senior couple who's had for the first time in their life a catastrophic illness and they're out of their home for the first time. It can be the single mom living in her car, working two low-paying jobs, trying to raise a family, domestic violence victims. We have lots of serious mental illness with homeless and drug addictions. So there's not a single fix. One of the items that I'm going to be pushing for tomorrow is relatively small, moderate-sized, controlled camps that have TPD involved and a non-governmental organization, an NGO involved as a service provider. Right now, when people call us to say, hey, there's an encampment in a wash up the street from us or in an alley behind our house, all we're doing is we're calling our homeless team and squeezing a balloon and say, well, move it somewhere else. We're not doing a thing for the safety of the people involved. We're not doing a thing to address the underlying needs, the drug abuse, the drug addictions, the domestic violence issues, the serious mental illnesses. And so my pitch is going to be, let's set up a series of moderately sized encampments that are controlled and monitored by both TPD and service providers, not as a permanent residence for these people, but as a way that we can find them and get them into the services that they need. So it's a transient sort of living situation. Other cities have tried that. they're a mixed bag. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that's going to be sort of the elixir fixer and it's going to solve homelessness. But for those people who take advantage of it and who want to avail themselves of the services that we can provide in a setting like that much, much more effectively than in a river wash or in an alley, then it may be a way of getting them into a housing situation and getting them off the street. So, yes, homelessness is a problem in Tucson. No, it's not as bad as other jurisdictions, but yes, we owe it to the people involved to try and get them into services. And I'm hoping that we can set up a couple of these controlled encampments and you know, take a swing at this and see if we can get some people off the streets and into housing.
All right, stick with us, Steve Kasachek. We're going to pause right here. More with Steve Kasachek on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Kate Delaney. Join me tonight for a conversation about what's happening in the world that affects you. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico is a great destination. We send so many of our listeners over to this beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Only a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, including a visit to the world famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more on things to do, and there are a lot of them, and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's continue now with our conversation with Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek. We keep hearing these reports that some landlords are really upping the rents on some people. I guess there's not a lot the city can do.
you know, it just makes me so mad when you see people putting maximizing their profit over, for instance, seniors, putting seniors out on the street. There is a state law preemption that says local jurisdictions cannot put into effect any kinds of rent controls. I'm not convinced that rent controls are the answer, but right now we don't even have that as a tool. So you're right. We have landlords, lots of them out of state, and lots of them aren't this, you know, single mom and pop living somewhere else who are just making a small investment. Most of these are what are called REITs, or real estate investment trust. And it's people pooling their money together, making an investment in a real estate, making a real estate investment in a different jurisdiction, different locale, doing some small tenant improvements, putting a facelift on the apartments that they're buying, largely apartments, and then jacking the rents up. And what happens is that they can then refinance their original loan with the higher rents, and then take the increase in what their ability to get out of that refi and turn it into some more property. So it kind of feeds on itself. It's really disappointing to me to see that we've got so many landlords right now, largely out of state, who really have no connection with the tenants that they're putting out on the street. So it's something that there is a bill at the state legislature right now that is intended to ease the rent control restriction on local jurisdictions. I suspect it's not going to get out of committee. And so we really have to be looking at adding to the housing stock. That's going to be one of the answers is, you know, supply and demand. But no, it's a huge problem, and it's affecting some of the most vulnerable people that we have in this community right now, because they are the ones who are living in what are right now the lower end in terms of rent, the lower end apartment complex that are getting bought, upgraded, and you know, flipped.
Steve Kasachek with us on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Steve, is the city back on board toward the next what's called RTA Next? That would be a reauthorization of the 20-year program.
So we took a really important vote last week to say that we want to continue to stay at the table as that conversation evolves. I think that the RTA board showed a really positive sign, a sign of good faith, when they voted. They made four basic changes. Number one was that they agreed to look at projects every 5 or 10 years to see if they're still needed and relevant, and look at them from a cost standpoint. Number two, they agreed to fully fund the City of Tucson's undone projects. We have about $200 million in unfinished projects, and they agreed to, A, fully fund them, and B, if they're not done by the time RTA Next gets to the ballot and is approved, that those projects will be at the front of the line in the next round of RTA, and they will not count against our project allocations for the next round of projects. And the third thing that they did that was really important was, and I credit Ted Maxwell for this, he's the ADOT member on the RTA, is that they recognized that whereas Tucson has been makes up 50%+ of the vote and tax base, population and tax base of the region, our voice at the RTA and at the PAG meetings, PM Association of Government meetings, is the equivalent of all the other jurisdictions. That's South Tucson, it's Marana, Oro Valley, and so what Ted came up with was that instead of doing weighted voting or proportional representation, either one of which would have required either state legislative or the governor's sign-off, and that would not have happened. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Instead of that, they increased the representation for City of Tucson on three committees. One is the Citizens Advisory Committee. That's where RTA Next, the guts of it, are going to be put together and then recommended to the RTA board. Another one is called the Technical Management Committee, where they look at project scope and funding And the third one is called the CART Committee, Citizens Accountability for Regional Transportation Committee. And what that committee does is it looks at the existing projects in terms of scope and progress, and they make recommendations to the board about possible scope changes. So increasing our voice in those three committees was, in my opinion, a sign of good faith and nearly the equivalent of the proportional representation we were after, and it does not require the governor's or the state legislature's involvement. So I think that they recognized that there was a disparity, and that that we found a way to thread the needle and address that without having to take the RTA, the full package, back up to the state legislature and have statutory changes, which simply would not have happened in time for us to get our own Prop 101 back on the ballot in May, which is also happening.
So that sounds like a win-win for the city of Tucson with 1-1, what's called Proposition 1-1, moving forward in May, going before the voters, and the city back at the table.
I agree. It's a win for the region. Mm-hmm. And Prop 411 is going to be on the May 17th ballot. I know we're short on time, so I'll give a real thumbnail
sure.
of it.
Real quickly, please.
It will be a half-cent sales tax. 80% of that, about $60 million a year for the next 10 years, will go into residential road repair. The other 20%, about $15 million a year, will go into public safety roadway improvements, such as Hawk lights and better lighting, speed humps, traffic circles, those kinds of things. We're killing too many people on our roadways right now. And so I think that combining the road repair with the road safety elements, I think, is going to be an attractive package for the voters on May 17th.
Yeah, it's just this road rage out there. We've had, just in the last few weeks, we've had the sheriff here with me on the Friday Focus interview. We've had the assistant police chief. We're going to have the new chief here on in a couple of weeks. This road rage is just out of control, Steve.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know how much of that's COVID-related, people just feeling pent up. But what you'll hear from Chief Kazmar is that even though there is less driving going on, people are driving faster.
And, yeah.
You know, I guess they feel like there's more space on the road, so I'll just drive faster. And the result has been the severity of the accidents has increased. And so there are a lot more fatalities this year. So I think that the voters will look at this and say, you know what, this is a good way to join these two issues at the hip.
You know, you're still out running, I presume. You see a lot of crazy driving going on, I guess.
Yeah, which is exactly the reason I spend a lot of time running past Zocalo on the loop, and not on the not out on the roadways. But
right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, in the remain, we've got about a minute. Overall, we're in a transition period. What's kind of your gut feeling about how we're coming out of the pandemic? What are you feeling right now, Steve Kasacek?
Well, I don't want people to feel like this is completely in our rearview mirror. We still had 768 new cases reported yesterday in Pima County.
Today,
We're closing in on 3,500 deaths in Pima County. The state of Arizona is going to hit 2 million cases. So let's not pretend this is done. You know, the Tucson Medical Center, the Banner healthcare professionals, they are still dealing with people on ventilators, people dying. They have staffing shortages, and I can't blame them for just getting burned out over 2 years working these, you know, 15-hour shifts in full PPE gear and seeing your patients die. So, and you're the family member who is effectively standing there holding that person's hand because of the restrictions on visitation. So
yeah.
We're not done with this. You know, we've seen these numbers about a year ago at this exact same time. We saw the numbers start to decrease. Let's not, you know, just start figuring that we're done with this quite yet. We achieved, in quotes, this new variant because we got out ahead of it. We got out over our skis, and let's just take it easy. Let the thing wane and get down to manageable numbers, because we're not there yet. Even though the trend is good, we're not there yet.
All right, Steve Kasacek, have a great day. Thank you.
You too, Bill. Thanks, Steve.
All right, that will do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Councilman Kasacek and John on the other side of the glass, I'm Bill Buckmaster, hoping you have a great day.